The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
Since I have to take off a few minutes early to pick up Ponzi from the airport, she's finally getting back after being in North Carolina for about a week and a half for her stepmother's funeral. She's been taking care of a lot of business for folks out there, and she was hopefully coming home tonight. Unfortunately, that trip got delayed a couple of times. The first time on Sunday night when she believed that she needed to be with her family for just a little while longer, making sure they were fine. And then the second time on Wednesday night, there was inclement weather coming through town, and I completely understood her not wanting to fly through a thunderstorm, even though each one of those things has got a lightning rod, those things being planes, by the way, not flying anywhere near the Capitol, for whatever it's worth, or anywhere near Washington, D.C. But tonight at about 7 p.m., she's going to be flying on her way home, and then at 10 p.m. Pacific time, she's going to be landing, and that's about the time the show would normally end, so figured I'd record about an hour or so worth of a monologue or kind of my things that have been happening recently that we unfortunately would not have time to cover in the normal course of the show as it stands tonight, what with the interview with Delicious Library, should that go down, and hopefully by the time this is playing we'll have finished our interview with Delicious Library. Jake had set that up by email, but I'm not sure if they had confirmed at this particular point in time. So last week I was making mention of the fact that I picked up one of the new iMacs. The iMac G5, 20-inch screen, beautiful piece of equipment. And then suddenly, I discovered that they had released a new one. And they didn't announce this at the time that I picked it up. I picked it up on Saturday, and then I learned through the various Mac websites that new ones were getting released, an upgrade all around in terms of hardware. The new machines, 2 gigahertz processor compared to the old high-end version of a 1.8 gigahertz processor. Still 20 inches of pure LCD joy, but then beyond that, gigabit Ethernet, further future-proofing, as well as a newer video card with more video RAM that would take advantages of what Tiger has to offer. So I decided to give them a call and see if they would allow me to exchange the the box. And indeed they would. There's apparently a 14-day return policy, although I would have to pay a restocking fee. But the beautiful thing was I had purchased an airport card because the old iMac did not come with an airport card or an airport extreme, and all that means is that it handles both A and B wireless traffic. The new ones come with it built in, so I was able to kind of offset a lot of the restocking fees by returning the airport card and the other iMac and getting the full-on upgrade. So even after having configured and everything, I packed it into the box and went back to the Apple store when they were going to call. And they originally had called like midway through the week, and I didn't get the message until midnight because my voice service didn't send the MP3 all the way through. I get the voicemails in audio format, obviously. How else can you get a voicemail? But I get it through email, and unfortunately it was a little late, so I missed that opportunity to come in and exchange the boxes because they would call when a new one would come in. So last night I was driving around town with Brandon Paddock, and you might remember Brandon from an earlier Chris Perillo Show interview we did talking about the new 64-bit operating system and what's coming up, how a developer really looks at search. And Brandon also blogs at geekswithblogs.net, and we've got the link over at the Chris Perillo Show website. Just go ahead and look for him over there, and you'll find and be able to listen to the interview. Brandon was in town for business, and I asked if he was, had really seen the sights, and he had not, and so I offered to take him out in Ponzi's Z4, the BMW Z4 that we picked up before moving to Seattle. And so he got quite a treat there. We were on our way downtown, on the way to the Space Needle, just driving by it. We weren't going to go into it. I think it's just a little overpriced, especially if you're just going to stand around and just be there for a couple minutes. And he's really not a photo-taking kind of guy. So we were about 2 blocks away, and I got a call from the contact of the Apple store from South Center, which is where Ponzi and I had originally picked up the iMac before she was called back to her home territory for the funeral. And he said, "Hey, I don't know if they've told you, but there's an iMac here And, you know, if you can come in any time before tomorrow night at 9 p.m. And I said, well, what time is it now? He said, oh, it's about 7 o'clock. I was like, can I pick it up tonight? He said, sure. I said, okay. So I turned to Brandon and says, how would you like to go pick up an iMac? He's like, yeah, great. So he didn't mind. He was doing nothing anyway. And so he got a little bit of entertainment and saw a little bit more of town. So we swung past the Space Needle, came back home, picked up the box, which had already been packed up, and drove down to Tukwila, where South Center is, which is a mall. That's all it is. And went into the Apple Store, and the guy who was there, who was holding the keys, as he had put it, apparently remembered me from Call for Help. So that was kind of funny. We talked for a few minutes, and he didn't think it was me. He wasn't sure it was me. He saw the name, but he didn't realize. And so it was kind of funny. And we ended up taking a picture together, and he exchanged the iMac. And, you know, I made sure I looked at the box. Everything was as it should be, the newer everything, and bigger hard drive even, you know, jumped up about 100 gigabytes, and for right around the same price. So I'm glad I exchanged everything. But then right when we were about to leave, he made mention of the fact that this new iMac G5 does not have wireless keyboard and mouse. It actually has a wired component. I said, why the heck would they do that? And they're probably trying to save money. And as the story will go, they went to great lengths to save money, apparently, with this new iMac. So I was a little disappointed and dismayed, and the store wasn't too big, being in a mall, so they didn't really have too many options in terms of, you know, other wireless keyboard and mice that would look well and work well with the iMac. Because that was one of the reasons why Ponzi was kind of attracted to this iMac, is that it had wireless, and she really likes the idea of being wireless, without wires, without as much wires as possible. And she's got a simple wireless mouse and a keyboard, nothing too fancy, with her regular computer desktop. So I said, all right, well, I need to pick up a new mouse anyway, because I can't stand those Apple mice that have no button, no scroll wheel. And if it doesn't have a scroll wheel, you might as well not use it. The second button I really appreciate, although I can get around it usually by holding on to a key with the Mac operating system. It emulates the context menu, the right-click menu, as Windows users would know it. So we picked it up, drove home, and you know, Brandon was actually more excited, I think, to see the iMac and going through that than he was to see the Space Needle and any part of downtown, even though I did swing by the Salty's restaurant over in Alki, which is adjacent to downtown Seattle, the best view of downtown Seattle by far. If you go to the restaurant called Salty's, make sure you do it if you come up here, especially at night. It's absolutely gorgeous, the view. That's the picture that I took of Dave Weiner and Ponzi when he was breezing through town. Yeah, I posted that to my blog and then to Flickr as well, and it's got the view of downtown Seattle in the background and Dave and Ponzi in the foreground talking to each other. So we get home, I set it up, I said, look how easy this is. This is insane. I go through the whole thing, I pop in the RAM, only to realize I probably shouldn't have bought the RAM from Apple. I could have saved another $3,000 by going with someone else. But, you know, hey, I figured you're investing money, you know, might as well just make sure everything's fine, it was working. But originally, I was planning on it just being a one-night affair. And when we first got the iMac, it did not have an airport card, and they didn't have any at that store. So I had to take a jaunt across town to pick it up the next day, and actually ran into Jake from 8bitjoystick.com, who is also a local who I'd like to pull into this show at some point in the near future. And so we didn't have the full experience, and I just wanted to open it up once. And you know, I'm big into that. I don't want to have to open it up every other week to change something and swap out a part or whatnot. So the Apple RAM, more expensive, but it works. Slipped it in there, went through the setup. Brandon never really saw OS X setup before, and it just worked. I mean, there was like, I think I had to pick a language. In fact, I was amazed. I didn't hit the option quick enough, and so about 10 seconds passed by, and the computer said, English. It was prompting me for visually impaired folks who might not be able to see what the selection was. I thought it was just genius, unique. Stepped through it, the rest of it relatively painlessly. The last time I had an issue setting up the wireless network with the Airport Extreme because of the way the protocol that I was using for G, I needed to switch from one to the other, and I'll have to document that because I don't exactly have it sitting in front of me. But it was just a very strange error, and it was probably the biggest kludge when I went to set up the iMac. And Apple just assumes that you have everything Apple. You have an AirPort, so therefore it's going to work. Well, if you have any other router, you may be in trouble unless you can configure it to the degree that the Mac is going to be able to figure out what it is. So like 5 minutes went by or whatever it was. Went to the desktop, nice and clean. I had one icon on the desktop. My dock was populated with all the latest applications. And like a minute later or so, software update pops up, says, "Hey, guess what? All these applications need updated." I was like, "Wow, that was easy. That was quick. That was painless. I mean, beyond painless." And it occurred to both Brandon and I that where setup for Windows usually is a problem when you pick up a computer is the OEMs. They throw so much junk at you, you got more spyware than you do legitimate applications on your computer. Every OEM does this. Every single one. And Apple, it was one hell of an experience. I got to tell you. I got to hand it to you. It was just fantastic. So I've got that up and running. But as I was, I forgot the best part. I go to plug in the keyboard, right? And I've got a table. It's an old white desk. The white desk, one of the first computer desks that I ever had, I still have. And it's got one of those keyboard trays that go underneath the table. And so I went to put the keyboard down, and the cable, the USB connector for this keyboard, this wired keyboard that this new iMac comes with, is not even an arm's length long. So I was like, well, unless they want me to put it right here and ignore the keyboard tray altogether, how am I going to do this? Well, I went through my drawer of cables. I've got about 14 of them. I mean, 14 drawers, not 14 cables. I got 14 million cables. And I've got a USB extender, so I used that to plug that in. It worked just fine. But I was just amazed that the keyboard cable wasn't at least twice as long. And it's not that long. I mean, take a look at the store. I mean, these things are short, so be forewarned. Either go wireless or don't get an Apple keyboard. In fact, if you want an Apple keyboard with a short cable attached to it, let me know. I'm getting rid of mine. I'm actually getting rid of a few things. While I was out and about today picking up a wireless keyboard and a mouse for the iMac, I was intending on stopping by GameStop. But by the way, before I go into that, I should finish. I did pick up a new wireless keyboard, an Apple-branded keyboard with the Bluetooth. That setup was painless. The UI was absolutely wonderful. And compare that to Windows, which is just a kludge. In terms of Bluetooth, the UI and the setup, it's a kludge, especially when you compare it to the elegance of OS X. So I also got a wireless mouse, a Kensington. And this Kensington mouse, yeah, it's got the right and left click button, but instead of a scroll wheel, it's a slider, so it's just like a touchpad. And it worked slicker than snot when I put it in. It's quick RF, so it has no problem communicating with things. It handles AAA batteries, or it charges on the base, so it's got dual, so you should never be out of a mouse, at least for too long. With that particular setup. But it matches everything, and that way there's no wires, and it's silver and white, so Ponzi will be happy when she returns. Last she heard, I only had wireless connected devices, and it didn't look too hot. I gotta admit, it really started to look more and more like a PC. The more PC things I had to throw into it, the more junkier it started to look, admittedly. One thing that perturbed me about that wireless mouse was that it actually uses a power supply instead of just straight out of USB, powering out of USB. Seems kind of strange and a little off-putting, because that's just another thing that I have to plug in. And the reason why I like wireless is that, I can go with fewer wires. So I picked up all that stuff. That'll be a nice surprise when I pick up Ponzi here right about now. As this is broadcasting live, as it's playing back in a time-shifted format, unfortunately or fortunately, I've already picked her up. So I was also going to go buy GameStop. And the reason why, I've got a PS2 controllers, the DVD player for PS2, and about three PS2 games. I've got a GameCube, about a couple controllers, and about three games. And then I've got the Game Boy, or I'm sorry, it's the Nintendo DS, the dual screen, with about five games, and actually, I'm sorry, about seven games, five Game Boy Advance games, and then a couple DS games. And I was ready. Oh, and I've also got a PC USB controller. It's called an Nostromo, and it's like how do you explain it? It's kind of like a one-handed keyboard. You've got a palm rest, and then you can type on a keyboard, and you've got a keypad and a button, and it's basically a gaming setup, a gaming hardware for people who use a PC. And I just never used it. I never really used any of it. So I figured, well, Craigslist, they're going to want it for pennies on the dollar, and you know, this stuff is still worth some money. It would be a pain to try to sell all this stuff in one fell swoop on eBay, so I went to GameStop instead. Or I was planning on going to GameStop, because I figured I would go there, give them the bag, say, I got to sell all this crap. Or, I'm sorry, high-quality junk. And I'm probably going to take store credit for that, because I'm going to exchange all of it for... That's a drum roll. A PSP. Yes, I'm swinging back to the dark side and going with something that Sony had put out. Much to my, you know, regret, I ran away from Sony years ago after seeing the tripe that was shoved down our throats, that being the memory stick. You have got the idea of the memory stick. Let's just, you know, the idea is that you have a memory stick that can work with interoperably with other Sony products. But the problem is they have about 16 different versions of a memory stick. In fact, it's a joke. You see those memory card readers in the store, you know, 17 in one? Well, the funny thing is that 15 out of the 17 are memory sticks. They've got the Pro, they've got Magic Gate, they've got Duo, they got Duo Pro. It's just crazy. And I walked away from this years ago. Ran, screaming, crying, bloody murder when I realized this after I handed a memory stick for my Sony DSC-S70 digital camera to a guy who had an Aibo. I said, take a picture with it. He said, sorry, it's not the right memory stick. I said, screw you. True story. And then I really haven't purchased anything from Sony ever since because of that. Well, after holding on to the PSP a couple of months ago, just realizing it was just... absolutely amazing experience. And I only played, you know, half a game for like half a minute, but it was so enthralling. I'm like, wow, this is just absolutely amazing. I was willing to look past the whole memory stick thing and just look at it as just a powerful handheld system. And of course, there's software available that will allow me to transcode AVI files so that I can watch them on the PSP. You know, the games that I've seen to date are just absolutely just gorgeous. So I'm exchanging all my other gaming crap, the PS2, the GameCube, all the games, the controllers, the whole kit and caboodle, the Game Boy or the Nintendo DS, the newer Game Boy, the bigger one with the touchscreen, all that. It's going away, and I'm going to exchange it all for a single Sony PSP. So I figured if I'm going to ignore the gaming products, I'm just going to ignore one product. That's the way I gotta go. And, you know, why don't I just go out and get it now? Certainly I could, but then I've got all this other stuff that's just kind of being ignored. I might as well just take this stuff, convert it into credit or cash, and get something, you know, smaller, better, newer. So that's the way I've always approached gadgetry, getting new gadgetry. I don't like getting something new outright if I already have something that exists. So, for instance, another product that I'm trying to get rid of, my digital camera, which is a relatively recent acquisition. I've only had it for a couple of months. The Nikon Coolpix 8800. And at the time that I got it, I had it was a Canon product, Canon, I think it was a G5 was the one that I had. And I hadn't gotten rid of it all the way, but I had basically given that to a friend of mine, Eric Mishka, who's down in Hollywood, does a lot of production with films and television. And he had wanted that kind of digital camera, but I knew that it's a pretty penny, even at a used price. And since he had helped so much with Locker Gnome over the past year when I really needed his help, I basically gave it to him as a gift, and he was very grateful for that. And it went to a good home. So that was one of the conversions that I made that wasn't exactly, you know, done outright. In earlier digital cameras, I've donated to my Mavica FD90 went to the Animal Rescue League, and the FD95 also went to the Animal Rescue League in Iowa. I was still living there at the time. And the old Mavicas, if you remember those, you could record on a floppy disk. And the reason why I loved Mavicas at the time is because most digital cameras had a serial connection, a serial interface. It was just a kludge. I mean, the software sucked. It was horrible. And when you used a floppy, you didn't have to worry about any of that. And the pictures, I still got them. I mean, it was just amazing at the time that you could record all that, you know, onto a floppy. So I'm getting rid of the Nikon Coolpix 8800 now, or at least attempting to. I posted things about it on my blog. Didn't really have any takers. I've considered posting it on Craigslist, but I'm still not sure if I'm going to get many takers there either, because it's a relatively expensive product. You know, I've got that. I've got a carrying case. I've got a threaded lens that I can't find, so I don't know if I can throw that in. But I've also got a 4 gigabyte micro drive that will probably go with it, and you know, I'd be willing to, you know, sell most of that right around the $800 range. Carrying case, cleaning kit, the actual Coolpix, the 4 gigabyte micro drive, just, you know, an amazing set. Well, why am I selling it? I miss Canon. You know, quite honestly, I went to Canon not long after I dumped Sony for a brand, and it spoiled me. I mean, the features, the ease of use, the, you know, they really listen to consumer feedback, and they really make, you know, a quality product, as, you know, as far as I was concerned. And I noticed that they just announced a newer camera, a newer Canon, after, you know, if you remember when Eric Rice and I were going back and forth about his, I think he picked up the SD500, and he loved it. And I was thinking about going that route, but then they talked about, I think it's the S2IS, if I remember correctly, and I'm not going to type on the web right now, I'm devoting all my attention to talking to you. So it's a new product. It's going to be coming out in June. Check out powershot.com. Yeah, like I said, I think it's the S2IS. Just an amazing camera, and I mean, as far as I'm concerned. And so I'm kind of sitting here looking at the Nikon going, I really didn't have a great experience with the Nikon. Now, some people just swear up and down by Nikons or for Nikons, so this is the camera for them. The people who want an 8-megapixel camera, 10-magnification optical zoom, great image stabilization, great images. You know, it's got the swivel screen, just great lens. I mean, the quality is just, it's really, really good. So I'm just basically selling it. And so whoever wants it, let me know. Go ahead, drop me an email, chris@perillo.com. We'll get to me. If you want any of these things before I get rid of them, or, you know, there could be a good opportunity for you to get them at a pretty good price. And so I'm going back to Canon, and I'm likely never to leave again. So if you love Nikon, if you've always wanted to try Nikon, this is a really good one, and that's the reason why I wanted it. It was really good. But ultimately, I think my allegiance really goes back to Canon. I just find it's more my style. It fits more my style. But I can't get that new Canon camera until I get rid of this other one. And so I need to get rid of it. And I'm not saying get rid of it like as in giving it away. I'm not going to give this away. I spent too much money on it. But I'm willing to cut, you know, an extreme discount when I say extreme, not too extreme, for somebody who might want to get a newer digital camera but doesn't want to pay top dollar. And like I said, I've been watching eBay for the same camera, and without the micro drive, they're going for about $600-$700. So with a micro drive, I figured I can get, you know, right around, eight, maybe a little over. So make me an offer I can't refuse. I need to get rid of it. I want to get my new, a Canon. I got to get back in the Canon realm. I'm done with Nikon, probably forever. I don't know. Some people like them. I am apparently not one of those persons. Had I hindsight 2020, I probably still would have gotten it, just to try it, just to experience it. It's much like the reason why I got the iMac, because I got to try it. I've got to experience it. I can't sit here and say, oh, OS X this, OS X that, if I'm not speaking from experience. It's very important. A lot of people who shoot from the hip are speaking with limited experience. The people who think that Windows is absolutely horrible have likely had bad experiences with it, or never having immersed themselves in a fuller experience. And, you know, I try to see, you know, all sides of the cube before I pass judgment. And I've said this before, I'm not, you know, just devoted to Windows 100%. I'm agnostic as far as platforms are concerned. And that's really a wise approach when it comes to technology, because each company seems to do one thing or a couple things pretty well. Other things, not so much. But at least some things they do pretty well. So I've also got a laptop I need to unload. And I know this is starting to sound like, ooh, Chris is just off selling his entire life here. It's Radio Tradio. Well, it's true. I've got this hardware, this great hardware, just sitting around for the most part doing nothing. Since I got my IBM ThinkPad, my Toshiba Satellite, which is still a fantastic machine, is just kind of sitting around, not really doing much. I mean, I've got it sitting in a room that we hardly go in. So in case I wanted to go in there and, I don't know, type, I could, and that's really the extent of its usefulness at this point. It's got built-in Wi-Fi, I think a 15-inch UXGA screen, 1600 by 1200, 64-bit, 64-meg video card, 32-bit processor. It's a Pentium 4 or something. Just a fantastic machine, and the thing that makes it shine is the Harman Kardon speakers that are built into the laptop. It's just an amazing sound. So it's a great gaming laptop. I would say a desktop replacement range, but I don't have any use for it anymore, and so I'm also selling that for, in my opinion, a pretty affordable price. Make an offer. If it's too low, I'll tell you. If it's too high, I'll probably tell you too. I'm not out to ruin anybody's life or not giving them a good deal. But I've got this laptop that's kind of sitting around, kind of collecting dust, as well as since I upgraded to G Network here, I've got a wireless router. That it's got the speed booster on it that Linksys had issued a speed, it was like an attachment of sorts that would increase your range for B, and it works absolutely wonderfully. So it's not just a B router as most average B would be, but it's a B with extended range. And make an offer. It's sitting around. It's collecting dust. It's not really doing anything. And I'm willing to sell any or all these things. I got so much just these things that just when you upgrade or you get something new, if you don't have that upgrade path, it just kind of sits around. So I'm big into, I just want to get rid of it. And, while I'm not going to get rid of it at stupid prices, I just think that it's better to just let it go rather than just kind of hold on to it and have it be yet another thing that you have to worry about or see or look at or take care of. All the gaming equipment I have, the PS2 and the GameCube, I got largely because I was going to walk down a path with a project that unfortunately did not pan out, and so I acquired different games and these gaming systems, and I just never really used them. If anything, I'm using the Xbox, and I've got tons of Xbox games, and it will happen, upgrade to Xbox 2 when it is released, Xbox 360 or whatever they decide to call it. If that is the official name, I think tonight they're actually airing it, or had aired it, on MTV for the first time, and most likely I'm going to download that footage from BitTorrent, so there's no rush in me seeing that stuff. You got to wait till November, I believe, before you can even get it anyway. But then at that point, I'm going to be selling the Xbox to, of course, that you can give those away at stupid prices, but, it's money that you can trade in. Hopefully there'll be some good trade-in deals going around town for credit on the Xbox 2 or Xbox 360. Which is awfully confusing with Yahoo naming their blogging service 360 and Xbox 360 and two competing brands, 360. Yeah, you spin 360, you start thinking about how branding goes, and if it's not done right, it's just not done well at all. So I've got a lot of stuff that's been happening over the past week. Being alone, though, I've definitely got a lot more work done, and I think when you work out of your home, as I do, the commute is just killer. Every morning you roll out of bed, that's it. Your commute is basically between there and the bathroom where you brush your teeth before you check your email, unless you brush your teeth after you check your email, as I used to do. Then I learned good, oral hygiene. It's a good thing. That's another thing I need to upgrade, but although I'm not going to be able to sell it, you can't sell used toothbrushes. But the Sonicare, I'm a real big believer in this. Learned about that about 6 years ago. Sonicare has got, and this is geeky, this is technology. It sends pulses, and when you brush your teeth with a Sonicare product, it's amazing. Your teeth are like you just went to the dentist, that clean kind of feeling where your teeth are all smooth and everything. You get that feeling every single time you use a Sonicare product, and they've just released a new one that's got the tube of toothpaste kind of rolled up inside the unit itself, which is convenient, but that's the reason why I like using the Sonicare, is it is convenient. And, you know, I never really used an electric toothbrush before then. And like I said, 6 years. Now using anything else is just, oh, it's horrible. Oh, it's horrible. Although I suppose I may be able to sell the base or just get rid of the base. Because you wouldn't sell the actual tooth part because it actually unscrews and it screws apart. But the actual base is still worth something. Ponzi still has an older, one of the original Sonicares. And the newer they got, you know, they get the pulse faster and just, you know, upgrades and everything. So, but you got to be careful when it comes to oral hygiene. You know, I have a feeling that one's just going to go to the closet. And that's planned obsolescence, I guess, and then just stay there for a backup. But that's another little geeky toy that I'm thinking about acquiring. But anyway, when you work at home, as I was saying in the very beginning, at least of this little segment, it wasn't much of a segue. You tend to fall into patterns, and everything is on fire. And when I say that, when you go to the office. You go to your cubicle, you go to your desk, you've got your stack of papers, you got your email. Everything happens there. And then when you leave, everything stays there. And, you know, sometimes you take your work home. But when you work at home, all your work is at home. So you never have a chance to really, you know, get away, at least when you're at home. The line is constantly blurred. This was something I don't think Ponzi was prepared for, but she's handled it pretty admirably. But we've learned, you know, right now we're sharing an office just because of the space we have, but we've learned that we really need separate offices. We get a lot more work done just because the other person isn't there to distract, to, you know, not get in the way. And I know this sounds so horrible, but in talking with other couples who work together out of their home, they say the same thing, you know, that you need a separate office. You need alone time. You need time to get your own work done, and then that way, you know, the other parts of the house aren't necessarily flooded, you know, with work. And it is work, you know, even owning your own business and working out of your home, there are a lot of benefits and there are also a lot of drawbacks to doing it. If someone offered me, you know, a fantastic opportunity to come and work for somebody else, I'd have to, I don't know, that's the likelihood of that happening is like, you know, a fraction of 1%, just because I really enjoy doing what I'm doing. You know, for instance, right now, just shy at the time I'm recording this right now, at 5 o'clock at night, about a half hour into it, you know, I didn't have to tell anybody about this. I just started doing it. And that's one of the nice things about calling your own shots, as long as you can afford to call your own shots. But, you know, conversely, you know, I've got other responsibilities to take care of. That keep me busy, and those are things that when someone else is around, they don't get taken care of. But when you're alone, you get a lot more work done, and I think everybody kind of works this way. Got my, you know, driver's license, for instance, and wanted to do other things. I've got to get the car registered. If there's any cops from Washington listening, please do not follow me. As soon as Ponzi gets home, I'm going to get all the stuff for the vehicle registration, take it in, and we're going to get our vehicles registered, and it shouldn't be a problem. They've actually got a vehicle registration place at the mall across the way. That's the closest mall to us since we live in Seattle. We live on Lake Washington. I took the bridge, the 90, across the way to Southern Bellevue, and there's a mall right there, and the tons of stuff in that mall. That's where the closest shopping is for that kind of stuff. Of course, I could go downtown Seattle and fight traffic and pay for parking, but it was just as easy to go over to Bellevue and shop over there, even though I live in Seattle. So I'm in the process of trying to convince Ponzi to move, that when we go to move, because we're only renting the place now, trying to convince her to go to the east side. I know that sounds so evil, especially if you're from this area, you know what I'm talking about, but I'm eyeing Kirkland at this point because it seems like a fantastic, I guess, a cross between, you know, what I've been used to, and I like living in the suburbs, and what she wants, and that's living closer to a city. So I'm pushing her that route, trying to get. I love Seattle, but I also know where I do most of my shopping, where I do most of my business. It's 9 times out of 10, it's over in Bellevue. I'm sad to say, although there's, you know, wonderful places here in Seattle as well. When Brandon came over last night, we ate up the street at a place called That's Amore, which is an Italian restaurant. Fantastic view of downtown Seattle from this side of downtown, from sitting to the east of downtown and looking at it to the west. Good prices, good service. The food, though, I wouldn't say absolutely fantastic, like you must have. I think there's better Italian in town. Machiavelli is probably about the best Italian that I've had, and that's over in Capitol Hill. And, of course, you're not going to need this information unless you live or drive through Seattle or come through Seattle. But, hey, at least you know who to turn to when you're looking for a good restaurant recommendation. I also found some pretty good sushi at a place called Monarchy. And that's the Neko, the cat that has the raised paw, which is good luck. And I don't know if that's pronounced properly. I'm sure PT could correct me, or anybody else who speaks Japanese can correct me. But when we see it, it looks like an Italian restaurant, so we call it Maneki's. And they don't like that too much because they're not Italian, of course. And Ponzi is half white and half Asian, so she can get away with that. She can straddle a lot of those racial jokes. Although she's not Italian, she's dating an Italian, so she thinks she's free to make fun of Italians. And since you know we're a fun-loving bunch, we don't care. So Maneki's, I'm sure, is where she would want to go tonight when she gets home from the airport, as she's probably not had sushi, being in North Carolina for the past week and a half. But it's been wonderful, by the way, if you've sent me an email or Ponzi an email or posted to her blog post regarding her stepmother's death, we really appreciate that. I know she certainly appreciates it as well, just because, you know, it can be a stressful time. And I consider myself very lucky to have not experienced a great deal of death in at least my adult life. The last time someone close to me had passed away, I think it was in the second grade. I was just a kid. Both my great-grandmother on my mother's side and my father's father, my grandfather, had both passed away, I believe, in 1982. And that, as a kid, that was very tough to deal with. And as an adult, I don't know if it's going to be tougher or easier, but very, very few people who I've known have passed and been really close to have passed away. And I can only imagine, what Ponzi's been going through in the past week and a half, really taking care of things. I think she's lucky to have that family and vice versa. And it's good to know that at least I found the right partner in moving forward with things, because she is a partner in every sense. I mean, relationship-wise, and she's also stepped in and helped a lot with the Chris Berlow show and Locker Gnome and Gnome Dex. A lot of the things that I really can't see and take care of, and she's really the yang to my yin, or the yin to my, I don't know, one of the two. A snake eating its own tail there. It's difficult, though, in working together, in living together, and in operating together, in a personal and a professional sense. And I'm sure out of this will spring a handful of tips, where every once in a while she'll laugh and say, you know, she needs to write a book about how to deal with a geek, because apparently geeks are different from other people. other guys, other girls, geeks just think differently. And, I've gotten a little better at explaining myself to her in a way that she could understand. Sometimes I'll do something and not know why I did it, and she'll point out that I did something, and I'll say, well, that's what you're supposed to do. And then try to do this. And any geek will say this. Have you effectively taught someone you know and love, or just know, how to use a computer, or how to use something that has to do with technology? It's impossible. You cannot give tech support to a friend or family member, period. It just does not happen. Aunts and uncles, no, they're fringe. But like moms and dads and brothers and sisters, it's almost next to impossible for geeks to teach that way. And I think the reason why, and just to, you know, speculate here, I mean, having at least that's me. Maybe I'm the only geek out there who cannot give tech support to his family and friends and loved ones. I find it frustrating, and maybe it's because that's my world. You know, I understand this world, and you don't understand this world. So does it have to do with a power struggle? No, not so. I don't think so. What I think it has to do with is, you know, I understand everything, and I also understand how much you know, and sometimes it's frustrating to retranslate those things to somebody else and, you know, explain it in such a way that you still are seen as, you know, you've got this knowledge and you're not losing any of that by transferring that knowledge to a friend or a family member. Ponzi every so often will get mad at me and I can't explain to her this paradigm. Please, if you have stories, send them in so that I can show her and prove to her that I'm not the only one. Unless, of course, I am, in which case, she'll get frustrated. She said, well, how come you were able to go on the radio and help all these people and you don't know them and you can't even help me? I can't explain it. It's a personal thing. It's, you know, that's my personal bubble. And since I know you in that personal way, it's hard to relate that kind of information, especially when it's something that I know someone doesn't need to understand everything about. And I remember, you know, going back to having a phone conversation with my father about a couple years ago. Half hour, he complained to me about why something wasn't working the way he thought it should be working in Outlook Express, and I finally said, Dad, stop. Do you want me to call Microsoft and find the guy who did this and ask him why they did it? He's like, no, he just wanted to get it off his chest. But it's like, when you have to give tech support to a family member, it's frustrating, and it's very difficult. And I think part of it is because, you know, you're in this relationship, and you know where the boundaries are, and you know how much the other person knows. And if you give too much away, you know, some of that mystique is gone, because a lot of friends who don't know computers, they look up to you, because you do, and you're the tech guy, and you're their tech friend, and you feel empowered by this. And when someone comes in, whether you mean to or not, sometimes that's where the belittling comes in, or that tone of voice comes in, like, I know more than you. Even though I don't say that outright, you know, it comes across that way, and I don't think we do it on purpose. And the reasons, I'm sure, are plenty. Yeah, it's something that I'm still struggling to try to figure out for myself, because I fall into it, even though I try to be civil. You know, something happens on Ponzi's computer, and sometimes it's easier to tell her to just move than it is to explain it, because I already – maybe this is why. Because I'll explain something once, and then a day later I'll explain it again, and then another day later I'll explain it again. And a week later, I'll explain it again. So I was like, why do I keep explaining the same things over and over again? I just cut to the chase. Just do it. Just fix it. It's just as easy as right-clicking an icon, you know, selecting this, selecting that, and then you're done. And sometimes, this is where I probably get most upset, is when they ask why or how. If I can't explain it quickly, or if I don't have time to explain it quickly, or I don't, really don't want to explain it quickly, or it means absolutely nothing to explain it quickly, then it's a taxing time for me. And maybe I'm just, this is a confessional. I'm sitting in front of a computer confessing to you my sins here. Forgive me, Father. It's been about 6 months since my last confession. But please, just tell me I'm not the only geek who goes through these things. I'm very validated, by the way, by Miriam and Robert, the Scobles, for their relationship, because Ponzi has discovered through talking with Miriam that she experiences a lot of the same things with Robert as Ponzi does with me. And it's great to hear at least that they're echoing the same kind of sentiments. I think Miriam, though, has kind of given up on the whole thing. I mean, she definitely, you know, tries to make Robert a better person, as I observe from an outside standpoint. But at the same time, she also knows that that's part of Robert's personality. I don't think Ponzi has quite gotten over that yet. I think she's still I think we can still adjust some certain aspects of the way your personality works, but hey, ultimately I'd love to do the same thing, but there are certain things that I just can't explain. A lot of it even boils down to growing up in the Midwest versus growing up in the South where she grew up. And we've noticed a lot of discrepancies there, probably more than any other cultural difference. I mean, yeah, she's half Asian, but she's full American. Dealing with someone from the South is like dealing with someone from another country. Everything is different. Everything. Social mores, values, the way you hold yourself, the way you talk, the way you converse. You know, they'll say that they're more polite, but at the same time, you know, I value people who are more direct. And I value people who are more direct, you know, not just because that's the way I grew up, but also because, you know, for me, time is money. So I want to spend my time doing things that I enjoy, that that I know are furthering my career or furthering my personal life. Those are the things I want to spend time on. And I don't want to pussyfoot around. I don't want to waste time. I don't want to get all flowery. I just want – just give me the facts, Jack. And, of course, I'm saying this after, you know, I'm trying to – you know, talk through a lot of these, you know, emotions just kind of as a trial. And like I said at the beginning of this particular segment, you know, I've got to fill about an hour's worth of time so that we have time to escape the confines of this house so that I can go pick up Ponzi from the airport. Now, watch this. Watch it be a late flight. That's something I should probably use the flight tracker widget on the OS X. It's a little widget on OS X is like a confabulator widget. Or what do they call it, a capsule? I'm not exactly sure. I don't use Confabulator because it's a resource hog, at least as far as Windows is concerned. And you can type in, like, one airport, the second airport, it lists the flights, and then it'll track it as it's going across the country. It'll show you where it should be. I don't think it's an actual tracking mechanism. Maybe it is. If it is, wow, I'm totally impressed in that case. You know, that's just the thing. I'd originally recorded this, by the way, in the car on my way from the Apple Store to home. I figured, well, I had about 20 minutes to kill, so I figured I'd record it. I used a Pocket PC in my wired headset, and when I got home, it recorded in, I think, 16-bit mono, and the quality was just absolutely horrible. So instead of doing that, I looked at IM. I'm like, well, is there anybody I should talk to? And I said, you know what? We don't have the phone system yet. It hasn't arrived. Although I got a Marantz portable recorder, so now we have two. So Jake has one and I have one. So if we need to, we can, you know, pull it out and do an interview on the spot. But the call switch has been, the board has been ordered for the phone system and everything. It has been ordered. And I know we've been saying this, since the beginning of time, but, you know, when we first started walking down the route of voice over IP for phone connections, we realized that it just wasn't going to work. The quality isn't there. And while most people are fine with recording calls over Skype, I just don't see the quality. I really don't see the quality, you know, and you'd argue that it's no worse than cell phone, but there are times that it is worse than cell phone. And, you know, in terms of what we want to be able to accomplish with the show, I would love to get onto a track where, you know, we're taking regular calls on a regular basis and, you know, of course, you know, making the sponsors happy. This, you know, this show in particular, always brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media, or at least at this point in time. At the point I'm recording it, they're sponsoring it, and hopefully they'll continue to do so. It's been good for both us and them, from everything that we both can tell. But to do calls, I mean, you really have to have phone lines, and so we're actually going to have a real phone line that you're going to be able to call in. I don't know if we're going to go toll-free or not. It's not exactly cost-effective that I know of. Depending on the volume that we get of calls, we may have to switch to a toll-free number. And, of course, you could call in any other way that you can use just a, you know, you can access a regular phone. Michael, the guy from England who used to hang out in the chat room, still does. He's actually back again, or at least that I can see, when we're doing our live show. Called in one time when we were doing the radio show on WHO using a voice over IP type of system. At that time, it was like freecall.com. I don't know, it was one of those free internet dialers. And the quality was okay, and it's only gotten better, you know, over time. But voice over IP just doesn't work for what we really want to accomplish with the show. So part of the direction, and just to kind of let you see under my kimono here for a second, if you pardon the expression, and the visual, I'm sure, disturbing as that was. One of the things I want to accomplish with at least our weekly show, should we still continue to do weekly with the call-in, although we may go daily depending on how well it goes, one of the things I want to do is not necessarily just set a record, but since we're online and we've got all this time, we don't have to worry about commercial interruptions, I want to, every week, take the most live calls out of any call-in show on the planet. So that's on the radio, on the internet, whatever. I want to take the most live calls in an hour. And it's going to be something, you know, as quick, it may be something, someone will call in, they'll ask the question, you know, I'll be able to give them an answer. I'm like, all right, thanks, talk to you later. No flowery BS, no stretching it out for time. It's just going to be straight up, you know, when we do this, it's going to be phone call, phone call, phone call, phone call, phone call. So I want to blow the lid off of everything and really turn it into the show that it was destined to become starting years ago, something that I had envisioned, you know, being able to take call after call after call after call. One of the biggest complaints that we had when I was working at Tech TV on Call for Help was that we only took maybe 2-3 live calls in an hour. And a lot of people complained about that. They wanted more calls, and believe me, the switchboard was constantly on. And I couldn't answer every question. There's no possible way anybody on the planet can answer every single question. That's where, you know, I rely on, you know, either the resources that are available on the internet or, you know, just my existing knowledge or discussion, or just knowing somebody else that we may be able to call and bring in. And you just can't do that kind of setup unless you really have a traditional radio show type of setup where you're able to handle multiple lines and call screening and all that wacky stuff. So that's what's coming. We're going to be doing that real soon. And like I said, that's what I'm shooting for, is to be able to be known to be the guy who takes the most live calls in an hour. And I don't know how many records we'll be able to break, but maybe we'll be able to get Guinness Book of World Records in here. There was also talk last week about pulling off another Helpathon, but I don't know. That's just that takes a lot of work, and you know, for the time you put into it and the energy you put into it, we'd have to find, you know, some pretty good sponsors who are good sports about that. And so, you know, after Gnomedex is done, that may be the next project that we work on, is the, you know, I don't know if we'll go 18 or a full 24 hours of help. But most likely during that particular process, I am going to probably find a pinch hitter to step in and take over every once in a while. Because doing 18 hours live is fine, but, you know, when you don't have commercial interruptions or, you know, taking breaks every so often, it can be quite tricky. And of course, we don't have a television studio in our house, and there's really not much to look at here. We've got some stuff on the walls, but it's not that exciting. With audio, at least, you can get away with a lot more of that. So, I wish we would have the phone lines up, you know, earlier, but, you know, timing, they say, is everything, and they say everything happens for a reason. So there shouldn't be a problem once the equipment ships. We've got the phone lines already routed to the house, and we've got the computers. We've got everything that we could possibly need. We're just building it slowly but surely, and really trying to turn it into something that is as high a quality a product as we can push out. And still continuing forward with the guests as well. It's tricky when you don't have a phone to rely on, but it's also a bit of a challenge, a positive challenge, to be able to find someone new every week if you can. Last week, everybody just unfortunately couldn't make it. This week, like I said, we'll see if we actually interview Delicious Library. If not, well, there's always next week. I got to be careful when I do that, because sometimes the dogs bark when I knock on wood, because this is real wood. we'll have the phone lines up next week. And I realize we say that every week, don't we? That seems to be the proverbial promise. I'm very happy with the way I've seen this this particular show go and grow. We're lucky to be a very popular show, and not only just in the podcast realm, but just in the internet audio in general. It's something that people want to listen to, and we'll continue to build that product out for you, and looking for quality people to talk to and interview, and then of course bringing you into the live aspect and the time shifted or the recorded aspect of it when all is said and done. So anyway, folks, I appreciate you tuning in tonight. Please take care, drive safe, and or if you're sitting at home in front of the couch, I hope you click safely and don't strain your finger or anything, you know, because a finger strain is just, it's a bad thing. So with that, folks, we'll see you later.
Hi, Hanny, it's me. Our flight is going to be delayed for bad weather, so don't worry about cutting the radio show short to come and get me, because I'm not going to be in Seattle for another 30 minutes, half hour after our regular time. And I should be online for the next hour or so until we're up in the air. So if you want an instant message, I'll be online. Okay, love you. Bye.
The Windows Media Stream for the live broadcast of The Chris Perillo Show is provided by Limelight Networks. Listen to the live Chris Perillo Show in Windows Media Player. Download the latest version of the player for Mac and Windows users at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.